Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. Now, what do you know about artificial intelligence and where and when it's used? Often what we do know or think we know is based on films depicting the end of the world after machines take over. To explain more, I'm joined on the line by IT expert Dr. Junaidi Ali. Good evening, Dr. Ali.
Hello, good evening. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. Thank you for joining us this evening. First of all, just to get some background behind this, what is your background and experience with artificial intelligence?
Yes, absolutely. So I'm a fellow with the Institution of Engineering and Technology and an AI and cybersecurity expert. I kind of first encountered working with AI when I was many years ago working on transportation systems and addressing some of the kind of complex data classification challenges that are there, which people will use on a daily basis without really thinking about them. And then after that, I went off to work in cybersecurity, a company based in California. And whilst doing that, again, lots of complex challenges in terms of how we would address new and upcoming threats. And also a lot of the academic research I was doing at the time was related to that. So working with AI to really address those kind of complex cybersecurity problems as well.
What is exactly meant by AI? We know it stands for artificial intelligence, but can you define that more succinctly for me?
Absolutely. So computers tend to follow strict rules, you know, typical kind of computer says no type thing. And AI effectively gives computers more human decision-making skills or human-like decision-making skills. So one real-world example of this is, say, you're unlocking your phone with facial recognition. You know, you might be wearing a different hat one day, maybe not wearing your glasses, something like that, and your phone still needs to be able to detect that it's you and not someone else. And in order to do that, there'll be AI behind the scenes in order to do that. And then we see some more complicated forms of that, being able to understand human language, being able to understand images, and actually being able to produce multimedia content, being able to produce written answers, which we're seeing more of. But underlying this is often statistical models, and we use these statistical models with lots and lots of data in order to create AI effectively, in order so these vast seas of data with these complex statistical models, they allow almost intelligence to emerge.
So I suppose it's fair to say then that we're using AI on a daily basis, possibly without even knowing it.
Absolutely. So, you know, the example I started with of, you know, unlocking your phone, but also, you know, transportation, when someone's going into the office, say, for the day, when they're driving, the detection of traffic information or even the operational function of the road, that data from that would be collected potentially using AI, and then your GPS could be using that to help steer you into work. But then when you go into the office and you open your email, there'll be spam filtering there to make sure you don't get any scam emails. And when that happens, there'll be AI behind the scenes there. When you search the internet for something, AI will be involved there as well. And then at the end of the day, maybe you go home, turn on the TV, when you're not on the radio, and you turn on a streaming service, and the recommendations you'll get there will often be driven by AI. But then at a bigger scale as well, when you look at kind of critical national infrastructure, as we move to renewable energy, and energy storage is often quite a big issue in renewable energy, we already are seeing AI being used to address some of those issues about when energy should be stored, when it should be stored back to the grid. And research we've done at the IET shows that, you know, that people see these possibilities. 46% of people see its potential in manufacturing, 39% in healthcare, 24% in tackling climate change. So really it's something which is able to and anywhere that we need operational efficiency in our day-to-day lives.
Now, in some research that was done by the Institution of Engineering and Technology, 51% of people admit to being nervous about the future with AI. Why do you think this is? Because like anything, any technology, as long as it's used correctly, it's our friend, really.
Yeah, so it's been interesting as I've been talking to people about AI over the past couple of weeks and the general public. It really gives you an insight into kind of people's, both their fears and their aspirations for the future. So I guess to peel back the lid a bit on that research done by the IET, what we saw is that 36% were concerned about privacy and 39% feeling it could lead to mass unemployment. And there's also demand from the public to see things like increased regulation, increased training and things like that. As engineers, when we look at any new technology, it's really about balancing the competing forces of risk and reward. It's kind of our Hippocratic oath, if you like. We try and manage the risks and amplify the rewards, so new technologies ultimately able to benefit society as a whole. And in order to do that, essentially, there are challenges that need to be addressed, definitely around privacy, definitely around making sure these systems are safe as we go forward. But in order to use kind of the golden window we have at the moment to put in place these regulations, to put in place the training, to bring society with us and make sure that AI serves democracy, we can really leverage a golden opportunity at the moment. The reason that golden opportunity is there is lots of your listeners may be, feeling that AI is constantly getting better and better. And the way these AI models are measured is in parameters. So if we talk about an AI model, some people may have used, ChatGPT version, which was 3.5, has about 175 billion parameters. Mm-hmm. Then the next version up, GPT-4, had about 1.8 trillion parameters. When we talk about human brain, we're talking about hundreds of trillions of parameters. And humans can experiment with the world. We can also think about thinking, something called metacognition. And essentially, the limiting factor before computers can do more is essentially that computers need more computational power. They need more resources. They need more and more powerful chips. And that's the limiting factor at the moment. But there's people working on that challenge at the moment. So that's why we have this kind of golden window at the moment to kind of address some of these concerns and hopefully try and ensure that AI is able to serve humanity and we're able to balance those competing forces of risk and reward.
I mean, some people think that AI is dangerous and even that it will take over their jobs. Where do you stand on those two points?
Yeah, so I think there is definitely a balancing act between risk and reward. It's a matter of making sure that we're able to take society with us. But I think any technology, as you say, it can be used for both good and bad. I think it's a matter of having that framework there to ensure that policymakers really are able to work closely with engineers to ensure that those are workable and they're timely and they span, and they work across borders, so they're able to address problems wherever they emerge. So definitely regulation will be important. It'll be important to bring all of society with us and make sure that the training is there. So there are definitely risks, but there's things which can be mitigated, and there's huge upside. And the other thing with AI in general is AI also has the possibility to mitigate some of the risks we see in society at the moment, whether it's climate change, whether it's cybersecurity threats. It can actually help mitigate some of those risk factors we face at the moment in society.
Now, you have a Master of Science degree. You're also a computer scientist and a specialist in cybersecurity. It's all right having all this technology, this AI and so on and so forth, but we have very little regulation in this country. So what would you like to see put in place in order to ensure that this is used appropriately, as you've just been illustrating?
Yes, definitely. So in terms of my academic background, I did both a MSc, and then I went on to do my PhD, both in computer science. And in terms of my regulatory background, I'm a chartered engineer with the Energy Council UK via the IET. And essentially, what we're trying to do at the IET is we're trying to ensure that the regulations that emerge, they are workable and they're timely. So making sure policymakers work with engineers. I mean, we saw essentially last week at Bletchley Park, the government doing some work on this in terms of, and we welcomed, I think, the statement that was delivered, the joint statement, which was given by multiple governments around the world. But I think what's really key is actually seeing these translate into the meaningful actual rules which will be used to engineer these systems. And there are complex challenges which engineers can help to solve. So, you know, one instance is after AI gets advanced enough, how do you determine what is a human and what is what is a robot? But there are solutions that we can do. So there's systems whereby the chips that are being built into computers in order to make payments, for instance, or in order to do fingerprint scanning, things like that, they have a way that they can be used to do proof of personhood, so called cryptographic proof of personhood, to prove you're a person. So that's a technological solution to one of those big challenges. And I think that's really why we need to see kind of the policy makers work together with engineers to address those challenges.
I mean, what would you say is the point of artificial intelligence? You've just explained a number of benefits and how it can be used in a multitude of industries. But, you know, I mean, computers, before the advent of AI, computers would use algorithms, well, they still use algorithms or metric algorithms. So why do we need this? Can't we just keep what we've got? I appreciate technology changes and things evolve, certainly.
Yeah, so I think there's kind of two dimensions which are there to this. I think the first dimension is if we look at where computers are in our day-to-day lives, lots of pieces of equipment we have in our homes, lots of our appliances, they increasingly have computers in without us realizing. These small things we call embedded systems, which are these little computers which are able to help with a lot of different things, whether it's a TV remote, whether it's a microwave, whether it's an oven, whether it's a smart speaker, some people may be listening to this show on. These computers are becoming ever more embedded in our lives. And then at the same time, we see as computational power gets more advanced, we're able to see these AI systems do more complicated things. So, you know, when I'm able to talk to a smart speaker and it's able to, you know, respond with my name and say, "Hello, Junaid, the weather is whatever it is today," and it's able to give those responses. And I think the advantages of that is really it provides a huge amount of operational efficiency. So there are areas where AI will bring things where, you know, humans can do, but they aren't necessarily efficient at doing. They're time consuming. They take lots of resources. So things we can automate where there is a task to do that. So that's very much in kind of the operational efficiency type realm. But also there is AI has a role in discovering new things and almost being a creative force in its own right, whether it's, you know, drug discovery, finding new medications, or whether it's in a function of where it's actually doing some more creative things and helping creative professionals being able to design things or produce different content. AI is able to help both on that kind of operational efficiency, but also that area of being creative, what's often referred to nowadays as generative AI.
I think it'll be a boon, and probably already is, in the medical industry and also security and things like that. And it seems to be quite flexible. I mean, can you sort of recode it, you know, and change it so it can do different things, or if when put into practice something doesn't quite work, so you change the coding on it? And how easy is it for people to do that?
Yeah, so the way some of these kind of generative AI models, the way that what's being talked about as the government's talking about in terms of frontier AI, the way these systems work is that there are these very big general purpose models which are essentially trained on everything you can find on the internet. You know, all this information is put into this black box, and it will basically generate responses for questions you put in. But then people are able to take these models and they're able to fine tune it. So they're able to give it examples and say, instead, I want you to respond in this way. So that's a route called fine tuning. And there's also ways called prompt engineering, where people try and engineer different inputs in order to get what they want out. So that's something which is already kind of emerging there. The interesting thing is we're also now starting to see AI models train other AI models. So we were able to see kind of this kind of producing content to train other models effectively.
Is there anything that it can't do, Junaid? I mean, it sounds like, you know, I appreciate it's not a one-size-fits-all. Clearly, these things are not. But, you know, is there anything that is beyond its limits and capabilities?
Yeah, so this is a tough question, I guess, because, you know, it's increasingly hard for us to find problems that machines can't solve. I think my starting point would be, we don't actually have a concrete understanding of how our own human brain works. So it's not something that's intimately modeled on our own biology. And when we talk about things often in verifying someone is who they say they are in the cybersecurity realm, we often say, you know, it's something you are, something you have, something you know. And, we have physical properties as people. There are things, there are things which we have, as I mentioned, those chips which can potentially be used to determine bots from humans. And then there's also, increasingly less so with things like knowledge and things like that, where these AI models are being trained on vast amounts of information. In fact, they're being used to retrieve information for us. So it is increasingly hard to find things which machines can do with, or can't do, which humans can. But I think the thing is there are still rooms to ensure that there are safety systems without people necessarily needing to go through the route of clicking those, I'm not a robot boxes whilst browsing the internet.
Where do you see the future going with AI? I mean, you know, can you sort of give a judgment looking at, because technology moves so quickly, say in 50 years' time, maybe 100 years' time, where do you think it'll take us?
Yeah, so I think the way I like to think of this is, if you think about where technology is physically, like approximately to us, you know, nowadays we have smartwatches, obviously we have smartphones in our pockets, maybe we're wearing, you know, rings or things like that, which have equipment. Some people have, the sensors almost implanted into them nowadays. We see technology becoming more dense around us, and so we see computers becoming more in our presence. But also we see that these computers are becoming more and more powerful, which means they're able to do more and more advanced things. But I think those two kind of trends can give us an idea as to the trajectory and things where things are heading. There are definitely a lot of things where things in our day-to-day lives which are necessarily inefficient, we could see those becoming a lot more operationally efficient. We could see machines playing a bigger role in that. We'll see, you know, computers becoming more widespread. We'll see them being more powerful and being able to do more. And there's lots of exciting stuff going on around us at the moment in terms of things like technologies like quantum computing and things like that, which will really really help advance this, and the number of startups which are based in the UK. And so I think there's definitely that direction that's there. But the counterside is, of course, that we need to, as engineers, obviously make sure that those risks are managed. And in order to manage those risks, what's critical for us is to make sure that we're working with those policymakers to ensure that the solutions are created, which are able to make sure that this technology serves interests, serves democracy, and isn't used, you know, in a way where it could be used to empower, say, you know, undermine democracy or lead to mass unemployment or not take society with us. So I think so long as we're able to manage those risks, there's huge upside to address a lot of the problems we face in society, make our lives a lot easier as well.
So it's certainly something not to be fearful of, is it?
So absolutely, I think it's something which brings huge, huge potentials. It's definitely something I think people should embrace, definitely something people should learn more about. And I think with that provision of making sure that those, you know, timely and sensible regulations are put in, I think that's really the opportunity that's before us, that golden window, whilst the computer resources aren't quite there to do it, making sure that we use that time to put in place the regulations. And that is something which will be able to remove that fear, basically, or be something that will be able to ensure that we're able to bring society with us as we develop these technologies. And that will address some of those fears, which, you know, we mentioned in the research that the IET did. But I think definitely in terms of, you know, the science fiction type views of the future, I think, even without regulations, we're definitely a little bit far away from that at the moment.
It's a fascinating subject, and it'll be interesting to see where we go with it as a species, as a planet, really, as a, really. Thank you very much for your time this evening. Dr. Junaid Ali, thank you for talking to Friday Night Clive. That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 6:00 p.m. And if you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by me, Clive Payne, and produced by Andy Caddick.